Good morning and welcome to Alcoholics Anonymous, AA meeting on air. My name is Steve and I'm an alcoholic.
Hi, Steve.
Hi, Steve.
We'll start our meeting this morning with the Serenity Prayer. God, grant me the serenity to accept the things I cannot change, courage to change the things I can, and wisdom to know the difference. The preamble of Alcoholics Anonymous. Alcoholics Anonymous is a fellowship of men and women who share their experience, strength, and hope with each other that they may solve their common problem and help others to recover from alcoholism. The only requirement for membership is a desire to stop drinking. There are no dues or fees for AA membership. We are self-supporting through our own contributions. AA is not allied with any set, denomination, politics, organisation or institution, does not engage in any controversy, neither endorses nor opposes any causes. Our primary purpose is to stay sober and help other alcoholics to achieve sobriety. This morning we'll be hearing from three speakers, and our speakers are from the Howick Group of Alcoholics Anonymous. The Howick Group meets every Monday night at 7:30 p.m. and you can find them in the Parish Centre, Star of the Sea Catholic Church in Park Hill Road in Howick, right here in Auckland. So guys, thanks for coming in this morning to share your experience, strength and hope of your journey of recovery from alcoholism. And we'll start the sharing with Marg.
Thank you. Good morning, everyone. My name's Marg. I'm an alcoholic.
Hi, Marg.
It's a real pleasure to be here today. I believe that I was born an alcoholic. I always had an alcoholic personality growing up. I was always either better than or worse than everyone else. I was very lonely, quite needy, and I just had a big hole that I couldn't fill, and I was quite a late developer as far as drinking went. I didn't really start drinking alcoholically until probably my early 20s, and it crept up on me. I do come from an alcoholic family, although I didn't realise that until probably I'd been sober quite a while, actually, because it was hidden. I think probably the main thing about my drinking really is that I basically couldn't stop. I was a binge drinker. I didn't drink every night. I had horrendous hangovers. I drank wine and I would quite often buy a cask. And I remember that if I lifted the cask up in the morning and there was still alcohol in there, then I obviously wasn't that bad. I actually did measure it once and there was a glass left and I thought, wow, there you go. I cut it fine this time. But that didn't count the three glasses that I had at the pub. But, of course, we won't talk about that because then that would mean that I had a serious problem. I did try Alcoholics Anonymous on two occasions before I stayed. I guess it just wasn't my time. And I still didn't really believe that I was an alcoholic, but I knew that I had a problem. And so I came and listened to everybody and I really focused on the differences. And when you do that, you'll find them. But there was one lady that she said something which I used to do, and that was look at the alcohol content of wine. When I decided that all I needed to do was cut down, I thought, well, what I'll do is I won't buy casks anymore because that's the problem. I will buy bottles. So I used to run along the fridges in the bottle store and just look at the percentages and find the highest. And I didn't care what it tasted like, and I found one that was 13%. And I thought, thank you. So I'd supplement that with no lunch and no dinner, and two of my husband's cans of beer when he wasn't looking, I'd hide them in the freezer and convince him that he'd actually drunk them and then kind of kick him off to bed so that I could supplement that. And it was just, I knew deep down, but I didn't know how not to drink. So one morning after having my head down the toilet again and two little kids running around, I thought, I can't do this anymore. I just don't know what to do. So I rang AA and came in and began a long recovery, which is still going on. And it's been the best thing I've ever done. One of the best things anyway. It was hard. It was very difficult. I found the first year, maybe 2 years, just amazingly difficult because my crutch had been taken away from me, my best friend, and I didn't know what to do with all my emotions. I grew up in Alcoholics Anonymous. I didn't know how to talk to people. I didn't know how to do anything, really. It was like I was just left with an empty shell. I thought, I don't know what to do anymore. And I couldn't work out why I was so stuck, because I always thought that I was quite a confident person, but that was just like false bravado, really, tears of a clown. I was always the clown at school, and I didn't know how to be with people. And if I had a few drinks, I mean, you know, that was great. But it wasn't, because I always took it too far, always. And I did learn slowly boundaries and, you know, went through the steps, which is, I think, is really, really important. And the Serenity Prayer has got me through a lot of times. And, you know, finding my higher power, which I found difficult as well, coming from a Catholic background, I did find it sort of wanting, really, but I just persevered. My sponsor said, fake it till you make it, just keep doing it, and I did, and just slowly but surely I got serenity and peace of mind, and, you know, my relationships have improved. I've had a child in sobriety, and I have fantastic relationships with my three children. And it's fantastic. I've never stopped going to AA in all the time I've been sober. I've had times where I haven't been able to go, but I have never, ever thought about, I don't want to do this anymore. And I hope that that never goes away, because I don't know that I would get back in, because it was hard enough for me the first time. And I'm an alcoholic, and alcoholics like drink. I still have the very odd drinking dream, but I don't want to go through that again. I've got too much to lose, and I don't want to lose myself again. And, I mean, I still joke around and I still do that, but I know that that is me now. I don't do it for anyone else. I do it because that's the way I am. I like who I am most of the time. I can still beat myself up, but, you know, I'm okay. And, yeah, it's just a fantastic program. And if anyone out there is struggling and not too sure, just, you know, hang in there. And it really does get better. Just take it a day at a time, and even sometimes a minute at a time. Nothing ever stays the same, you know. It just, it does get better all the time. When I came in, I never thought that I'd get to where I am now. I couldn't relate to people that had been sober for years. It was only people that had been sober for weeks or months. And even that was a stretch, because I couldn't go more than a couple of days. And, you know, I'm here, and, you know, my life's good. It still has challenges, but I don't have to drink over them. So that's great. Thank you for asking me to share.
Great. Thanks, Margie.
Thanks, Margie.
Thanks, Margie.
You're with Alcoholics Anonymous, AA meeting on air, and you're on Planet FM 104.6. Our speakers this morning are from the Howard Group of Alcoholics Anonymous. And Dave, do you want to share?
Yes, thank you. My name's Dave. I'm an alcoholic.
Hi, Dave.
Yeah, I drank alcoholically for a long time, and I know when I was a teenager and I first drank, I thought that I'd found the thing that was missing in my life. I thought I'd found the magic elixir to life, because when I drank, I suddenly felt 10 foot tall and bulletproof. I felt better than I was when I was normal and sober, which isn't true, but alcohol made me feel that way. I thought that it made me feel better than I actually was, but that was never true. I would binge drink, so wouldn't drink for a couple of weeks, and then just hit it really hard for 3 or 4 days and get lost in it, not turn up at home. And when I got married, the same thing started happening. After about 2 months, I'd meet up with some guys from work and go for a drink on a Thursday night, and sometimes not turn up till Saturday. And I hated those times, you know. Afterwards, at the time, it was okay. Because I was drinking, I was happy, and I thought, oh, you know, everything's cool, it'll be okay, I'll get through this, and I'll talk my wife around, and, you know, it'll be okay. And I'd get home, and I'd feel guilty and remorseful, and it was horrible. And then I'd score some brownie points by doing the garden and mowing the lawns and doing a whole lot of jobs around the house on the Sunday, and go back to work for the week and stay sober, and then fall in that hole again and do the same thing over again, you know. And it's like they say about that, doing the same thing over and over again and expecting a different result. It was just never different. I'd drink, I'd get drunk, and I wouldn't turn up at home. I turned up in some funny places. So I was living in Christchurch, one part of it, and I ended up in Blenheim, you know, overnight. And that just doesn't happen because you're sober and you're well-centred. It happens because I was drunk and I was inebriated to the point where I didn't know what I was doing. It was, I was on automotum. But anyway, we ended up having four children, and I was still drinking, and my ex-wife's mum and dad died 7 days apart, and she was courageous enough to say, I want my life back, you know, because it was just repeating the same circle over and over again. I was going out and getting drunk, then being feeling sorry and trying to make up for it. So she said she wanted her life back, and when she said that, I knew what she meant. I didn't want to understand it, but I knew what she meant. So we separated, and I suddenly thought, oh, you know, this is great. I've got my life back. I'm single, and I can go out and get drunk whenever I like and all this sort of thing. And I drank pretty hard for 3 months, and then I hit the wall, and I had a realisation that I'd lost everything I loved and cared for, and that's not material things, but a wife and a family, being the father and partner of somebody in a family unit. And it really struck me really heavily, and I suddenly thought, it's me and it's drinking. Because I'd often been told by different people and my ex-wife that I had a drinking problem. And I didn't want to look at myself. I wanted everything to be all right, but I didn't know how to do it. And I suppose I thought, well, I'll just ignore it and hopefully it'll go away. And that's the way I treated life most of the times. I'd just carry on, headstrong into a strong wind. I end up ringing up AA, and because I was 3 months of this drinking binge, and I rang them up and said, I rang them up on a Sunday night, knowing that there'd be nobody there. And there was an answer phone with a message on it, and it had three numbers. You know, alcoholics are really quite intelligent. They don't use it to their best advantage a lot of the time, but I think they're quite clever. And I was looking at these numbers, and I wrote them all down. I had to play the recording over and over a couple of times. I wrote all the numbers down. There was no names. And I thought, you know what? Those first two numbers are guys, and the last number's a woman. I'm going to ring her up, and I'll wrap around my little finger and tell her this big sob story, and she'll say, you're not an alcoholic. I rang this third number, and it was a woman. I thought, oh, yeah, see, I know. And I started telling her my story. And she said, oh, you might not be an alcoholic, don't come. I went, what? You can't say that. And it was quite funny because I thought, oh, man, they don't want me. And all she was doing was saying, you know, if you're not ready, you're not ready. Mm. You know, and so I said, well, no, actually, she told me part of her story and I related to it. You know, but I didn't want to tell her. I just listened on the phone and I was crying really heavily, and I was really hurting really badly, but I didn't want to show her. You know, that's pride. And so I said to her, oh, well, when's a meeting then? And she said, oh, I'm going to one next week, next Tuesday, which was in 2 days' time, you know. And I thought, God, I don't know if I can wait that long. You know, I feel like it's a long way away. I don't know if I can go without a drink for those 2 days because I'll be thinking about it. But I just busied myself, and I went to work on the Monday, and they sent me home because I was looking a real mess. And I stopped drinking on the Saturday and went into the shivers and the shaking. And I went to work, and I'd been crying all Sunday and Sunday night and upset that I'd lost everything that I cared for. So they sent me home and said, I told them what was going on, actually, my boss. And he told me to stay at home as long as I needed. And I was always welcome back, you know, whenever I wanted to come back. So I stayed home Monday and Tuesday and went to the meeting on Tuesday night. And the woman met me at the meeting and introduced herself, and straight away introduced me to a couple of guys. And then she took off, didn't even stay for the meeting. I thought, doesn't she want to hear me talk? I had a bit of ego. And so these two guys chatted to me, and then the meeting started. And it was a big meeting, quite a big meeting. There's about 30 people there, and the first six people shared. And I don't really remember a lot more after that, but those six people shared parts of my life, you know, from inside my heart. You know, I'm pointing at my chest here, inside my heart. They shared parts of me, and I thought, you know, my wife's spoken to these guys and told them all about me, and they're just repeating it, you know. And that's how crazy I was getting. You know, like, I was making things up because I didn't want it to be true. And I thought, no, she doesn't even know these people. She doesn't even know I've come to AA, you know. So I stayed till the end of the meeting, and a couple of people tried to talk to me at the end, but I took off out the door, went home. And, of course, there's one meeting a week on a Tuesday night, isn't there, you know. So next Tuesday I came back and went through the whole week white-knuckling it, because I wouldn't talk to anyone and find out that there was a meeting every night, or probably five or six a day in Christchurch. I went home and white-knuckled it for a week, hung on by the tips of my fingernails, and came back the next Tuesday, and I did that for another week after that as well. And this guy stopped me at the doorway, and he said, "Do you go home to look after your kids or something?" I said, "No, I go home to be by myself." And so he wouldn't let me out the door, and he started talking to me. And the guy next to him said, "Oh, to somebody else, did you go to the meeting on Friday night?" I said, "Oh, is there a meeting on Friday night?" And he said, picked up the meetings list, and there was 65 meetings in Christchurch at that time. And I was thinking there was just one, you know. So I realised that when you come into, when you get sober, and come into sobriety and come into AA, you don't know everything, but you think you do. Like, when I was drinking, I'd go out and drink in a bar or something. I'd join in all the jovialty and all the fun and start talking to someone. They might be talking about cars or sport, and I'd join in like I was an expert, a sudden expert, just like that, on any subject they might like to bring up. And alcohol did that for me too, you know. Like, it gave me what I thought was the courage to talk to people. And like, even when I was a teenager, I couldn't ask a girl out unless I was drinking. You know, I'd got the courage to ask somebody out when I was drinking. But when I wasn't drinking, I couldn't do it. So that's why I thought this was the magic elixir to life, you know. Anyway, yeah, so I ended up getting sober and joining in with the groups in Christchurch. Loved my sobriety. You know, I just loved going to meetings. Went to four or five a week, and when I was first sober, and I just couldn't believe that life could be so different to the way I led it. And it's the best thing I've ever done. I've travelled overseas, been to an international convention for AA, and all those sort of things, you know. And I just can't believe there's 45,000 people at this AA international convention in Toronto in 2005, and it was amazing to see that many sober people in one place. You know, it was beautiful. My life, and like Mark said, my life is the best it's ever been. I haven't got all the material things I once had, you know, cost me a little bit, but that's not the be-all and end-all of life, you know. Living life on life's terms and really being able to love somebody and understand somebody, not just love someone and just think, oh, well, you know, I'm going out on Thursday night and coming home on Saturday. That's not really caring for someone. And I often think that if my ex-wife had done that to me after a month's marriage or 2 months' marriage, I would have said, hey, down the road, you know, because I wouldn't have known where she'd been. She didn't know where I'd been. We stayed married for 13 years and had four kids, and we had six children, actually. We lost two at birth. But it just showed me that I was just living on a day-to-day basis, trying to hang on to life, you know, whereas today I've got a whole life that I live on a daily basis. But it's tremendous. It's beautiful. And I love the AA Fellowship, and I love the people on it. And thank you for letting me share.
Great. Thanks, Dave.
Thanks, Dave.
You're listening to Alcoholics Anonymous AA Meeting on Air on Planet FM 104.6. Our speakers this morning are from the Howitt Group of Alcoholics Anonymous. And Sue, do you want to share?
Yes, good morning. My name's Sue, and I'm an alcoholic.
Hi, Sue.
I think I had my first serious drunk when I was 12. I was lonely too, and asked some people if I could be their friends. And We went to these guys' house and they were drinking clear stuff that I didn't know what it was, but it packed a punch. And I can remember drinking this stuff, and it was yucky, but I thought, oh, gosh, I want to be like them. And that was the scenario for my drinking, is I just wanted to be like other people and fit in. I did put myself in unsafe situations, and my drinking started just, you know, like most people's on the weekends. I can remember walking in town, my friends and I would have rum in our Coke bottles, and we just thought we were so clever and so sophisticated walking down the street with our rum and Coke. And, you know, and that eventuated into, you know, nightclubs, disco. I'm from the disco area, so, you know, people went to clubs and danced. And, and you know, once again, we were thought we were very sophisticated, and, you know, it was really fun and, you know, a great time. I began drinking every day. At 17, I was living with someone, and we... you know, we thought we were quite unique, that we lived and we brewed our own beer and made our own wine, and his father had a still in his garage and we grew our own dough. We just thought we were such the cool hippies and so self-sufficient. And, you know, people came around to our house, you know, people on motorbikes, that sort of, we ran with sort of outcast people. We weren't like... bikies, but, you know, it was always us loners and oddballs all together. And, you know, for a long, long time, you know, I didn't think drinking was a problem. And people share that they try to stop. Well, I can't remember ever trying to stop, you know. For me, it was, you know, I just wanted to get off my face, get out of it. Drinking covered up a lot of things for me, and I guess that was my way of coping. You know, some people run or have healthy diets, but, you know, alcohol and marijuana was just enough for me. When I was about 21, I went through some struggles in a relationship, and I decided that I would run marathons and meditate and eat vegetables. And I did that for a couple of years, you know, and after a while I thought, oh, gosh, I don't want to be... you know, I was sick of living like a nun, you know. And I got nun, you know, as my friend says. So I decided, you know, I wanted, you know, people and things in my life again. And as soon as I left that, the same day, you know, I started picking up again. I was back into the dope. I was back into a sherry. I went back to my ex-partner, and he proceeded to tell me that he didn't want me to be with him anymore, and so I had to find somewhere else to live. And that was really the start of something for me. You know, alcohol became... not just fun, it became a way of really dealing with, or not dealing with, the pain in my life and that feeling of rejection that, you know, I tried to avoid, but, you know, it was often there. So for about another 18 months, I drank and used, and I lived with people who, you know, drank and used, and it was very scary. Some of them were very violent and strange people, and I remember getting very paranoid. I can remember one night being so full of fear and leaning up against the door hoping this raging weirdo wouldn't come into my room, because, you know, in the end I became very isolated. I can remember going to a party, and some friends and I had found this tequila bottle, and it wasn't ours, and so we proceeded to have drinks out of this tequila bottle. And we put it back up on the fridge so no one would know, and everyone had gone except me. And I was walking out, and this girl was walking in, and she said, oh, who drank the tequila? And I sort of said, well, I had a little bit, you know. And so that ended in quite a violent situation, and that's where my drinking was taking me in the end. And I thought it was all their fault, you know. I'm not like that. But after a while, you know, I started drinking at home because those things were becoming quite frequent, and my boyfriend wasn't coming around, and I was getting lonely and isolated. And that's where my drinking took me. I started wondering, I guess, if drinking was a problem after that violent incident, and I started reading books on other addicts and what people, you know, how do people get happy in life? You know, there must be a secret that everyone else knows that I don't know. So I started reading that and some spiritual books and started really questioning alcohol and its effect in my life. And the day I rang AA, I don't remember doing it. I had some heavier drugs on me, and I could see that, you know, I was having to have more heavier things to alleviate the pain. So I came to a young people's group of Alcoholics Anonymous. That was in 1988. They used to meet in Ponsonby on a Monday and a Friday night. And I came to that meeting. I don't remember the sharing because I was quite a sick person then. But I remember afterwards one of the young girls pulling me aside and talking to me. And, you know, I was sort of saying, I'm only 24. I can't be an alcoholic, you know. And she was going, well, I'm 18 and I'm an alcoholic. It doesn't matter, you know, how old you are. It's what happens when you drink. And I said, well, I don't have these curly stories like some people have. You know, I haven't been to jail. I haven't been arrested. I was too afraid to drink and drive. That's, you know, I was quite a fearful person as well. Maybe it was a bit of sense. I don't know. But, you know, and she sat me down and she, what we call 12-stepped me and talked me through the first, second and third steps and asked me about, you know, what happens in your life? What happens when you drink? And I said, well, you know, I don't just want one. I can't afford a lot, but I'll drink the whole lot, what I do have. And, you know, I'll smoke all my pot and have to go out and buy some more. So, you know, she started saying, well, do you think your life is becoming unmanageable because of this powerlessness you're feeling? And, you know, I was in denial, you know, but she was so patient. She sat with me for an hour talking me through these first and second steps, and in the end I had to admit that I was powerless over drinking and drugging, and my life was unmanageable because the people in it weren't doing what I wanted. And, you know, and so I came into Alcoholics Anonymous and I got a sponsor and I began to work the program. And, you know, when I came into AA, there were lots of very old people and there was only a young people's group, but I hung in and I probably followed like a puppy some of those old people around because they had what I wanted. And so I'm very grateful. Thank you.
Thank you, Sue.
Thanks very much, Sue.
Now, this brings us towards the end of our meeting. Our speakers this morning have been from the Howick Group of Alcoholics Anonymous, and the Howick Group meets every Monday night at 7:30 p.m., and you can find them in the parish centre of the Star of the Sea Catholic Church in Park Hill Road in Auckland. So thanks, guys, for coming in and sharing your experience, strength and hope this morning. If you have a problem with alcohol and you want help, you can phone 0800 AA Works, and this will put you in contact with an AA member in your local area. There are over 100 AA meetings each week within the greater Auckland area. And for more information, log on to aa.org.nz. Thanks for listening. We'll be back here again next Sunday at 10:45 a.m. on Planet FM, and our meeting will have a Pacific theme. So we'll close our meeting with a serenity prayer. God,
grant me serenity to accept the things I cannot change, courage to change the things I can, and wisdom to know the difference.
You can hear this program again at planetaudio.org.nz/AA Meeting on Air.